So we are in the seventh verse of this beautiful text, where last week we had talked about what is this I that I am. And I is that consciousness, is that awareness, is that life principle that is there constantly with me through all states, through childhood, youth, middle age, old age. It is constant. It's not the ego. It's not the individuality. Because the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, this ego, you may think it is that ego that was there in childhood and is there now, but that has changed. The perceiver has changed. What I was perceiving as a child, I do not perceive anymore. What I was feeling, what I was thinking, everything has changed. So everything in this world has changed. The body has changed. The mind has changed. My intellect, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker has changed. The world that I have perceived, the objects, emotions, and thoughts have changed. And my desires have changed. So everything has changed. But what remains constant is the Lord's presence that we have shown here as Om. It is the life principle, the consciousness. And in the seventh verse, it says that this state of awareness or consciousness, or what you can call as God or Atman or Brahman, the Lord, is there constantly in me, not only in the childhood, youth, and old age, but also in the states of waking, dream, and deep sleep. Even in deep sleep, the awareness is there. That's why my body is alive. My body functions even in deep sleep. And it's also there in all states, whether I'm happy, whether I'm unhappy. You can't say when I'm happy, God was with me, and when I was unhappy, God was not with me. He is there with me. When I am good, He is with me. Even when I am evil and when I am stabbing somebody in the heart and killing them to steal their money, He is still with me. He is the one giving me the energy to plunge the knife into that person's heart. So the Lord is with me. It is how I use His power, His energy, that determines whether I am a saint or I am a sinner, whether I am a criminal or I am, you know, a realized person. So that consciousness is always present. And we had done the first two lines last week. I shall read the whole seventh verse.
Balyadishvapi jagrada dishutatha sarvasvavastha svapi vyavritta svanumartamanahamiti antaspurantam sada svatmanam prakati karoti bhajatam yo mudraya bhadraya tasmai shri guru murtaye nama idam shri dakshina murtaye.
So in the first line he says, through childhood, youth, waking, dream, and deep sleep, and in through all states of mind, joy, sorrow, etc. Aham iti antas sfurantam sada. It is shining as I. So that I which is constantly shining, which never dies. And that is what is said, that even at the time of death, when I drop this body, this consciousness does not die. The Lord in me does not die because He is permanent. And we say there is only one consciousness everywhere. It's not that my consciousness is different from her consciousness and his consciousness, but it is that one awareness, the one consciousness that we call as Brahman or God or Father in heaven or Allah or Guru Nanak, but it is that one consciousness that is all pervading and that is constant. And that is who I really am. That is the essence of this beautiful text, that you are that consciousness. So what is required is a change of thinking and new knowledge. It is not new knowledge in the sense, at this moment, as an individual, I may be ignorant. As the life principle, I am all-knowing. But not knowing that I am that, I think myself to be this limited individual, and then I suffer the joys and sorrows of this world. So it is, as Eckhart Tolle says, it's not I'm going to give you any new knowledge. I'm just going to make you aware of what you already know and what you already are. So that is called knowledge. So in the third line he says, Swatmanam prakati karoti. So Swatmanam prakati karoti. He makes his own nature, the teacher or the Lord, he is equating the two. He equates the teacher, my guru, the realized master, and the God as one. He sees no difference between the two. So he says, my teacher or the Lord, Swatmanam prakati karoti. He makes his own nature available to me. To whom? To bhajatam, to one who approach the teacher with devotion. Faith and devotion are very necessary. It does not mean blind faith, as we have talked many times. Faith accompanied by right understanding. So one who approaches the teacher with faith and with a desire to know, then the teacher provides that knowledge. But sometimes the teacher may talk and may give a long discourse for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. But here he says the teacher does not speak. He only makes, he or she, the teacher can be a she, makes only a gesture called mudraya bhadraya, the auspicious sign, which we also use in meditation. People, when they sit for meditation, put, you know, their palms on the back of the palm on the knee. And what does this mean? We shall explain. And tasmai shri guru murtaye nama idam shri dakshina murtaye. So first we shall talk about this auspicious sign, and that is the basis of this knowledge. So when I put my index finger on my thumb and then put it on the knee to meditate, now what does this signify? First of all, what is this index finger? The index finger, they equate as ego. Why? Because I point, you know, I don't like you, I like you, you are my friend, you are my enemy. That's why they say it is rude to point. Because in pointing, you are separating myself from others. So the index finger represents the ego. Now, this is the ego, and what are these other three fingers? The other three fingers represent the body, the mind, and the intellect. So the body, the mind, and the intellect. Or some people say it represents the physical body that we can see, the physical body, the visible body. The mind and intellect together are labeled as the subtle body that I cannot see. I cannot see your mind and your intellect, and neither can you see my mind and intellect. Some of you may be enjoying and saying, oh, this is good, and some of you may be saying, it's 6:40, how much more time before I can leave? So I do not know what you are thinking. So that is called the subtle body. So this is the visible body, this is the subtle body. And then V is called the causal body. The causal body means which causes me to act. Whatever good or bad we do, it is because of our vasanas, our desires. And they say that we took birth also. The cause of this birth was this causal body. So, these three fingers represent the gross body, the subtle body, and the causal body. So, when these three fingers are aligned, are focused in one direction, so they are straight, they are focused, they are all working together. Or the body, mind, and intellect all working in one direction, and the ego is separated from them. So, the ego is no longer identifying itself with the gross body, or the subtle body, or the causal body. What is the ego touching? The ego is touching the thumb. Now the thumb represents God's presence in me, because the thumb is necessary for the hand to act. If the thumb is cut off, my hand is useless. I may have all the other four fingers, I have the palm, I have everything, but it is the thumb that I use to pick up things, to write, to drive, to turn the key, to, you know, anything, cooking, everything, you have to have the thumb. Without the thumb, the hand is useless. If you lose one finger or the other finger, your hand can still function, but the thumb is the most important. So thumb represents Brahman, represents God, because without God's presence in me, I may have the body, I may have the mind, I may have the intelligence, I may be an Einstein. But if God is not in me, I am worthless, I am useless. So the thumb represents God. So the ego separated from the gross, subtle and causal body means it's not identifying, it's no longer worried about, it's no longer giving importance to the gross body, the subtle body or the causal body, turns towards God, turns towards Brahman, and what does it form? It forms a circle. Now a circle is considered as infinite because it has no beginning and has no end. You know, a line, if you draw a straight line, no matter it may be 10 miles long, 100 miles long, 1,000 miles long, it will still have a beginning and have an end. But in a circle, there is no beginning, no end. It is continuous. So the circle represents that highest knowledge, that I am perfect, I am complete, and I am that infinite consciousness which is ever complete, ever perfect, which is immeasurable, which is never ending. So that understanding a teacher can give us just by showing us that. The teacher doesn't have to speak a single word. For, you know, they say, na, akal mand ke liye ishara kafi, in Hindi they say that. For a wise person, all he needs is one indication and he has understood. And that's what in this text, when the students approach the teacher did not speak. As you see in that picture on the left side, there are four students and the teacher is sitting up above, but the teacher did not speak. In that particular text, he just indicated and they understood what is the teacher trying to indicate, that you are that consciousness. Do not dwell too much upon your body, mind, intellect. Do not spend too much time taking care and worrying about them. Pay attention to the Lord within and become one with him. And that is all the message of this book is. And then later on, Shankaracharya then took the message from that teaching and put it in this text, in this beautiful 10 verses. So here we see that there is a paradigm shift. If you cannot see it, maybe you could move this side. Everybody can see this chart. There is a paradigm shift is required, a shift of thinking. Because all throughout our life, from childhood onward, I have been taught that I have to take care of myself. You know, looking out for number one. That is the primary, you know, teaching all over the world. Worry about yourself. Who cares a damn about what happens to anybody else? So I should worry about my body, take care of my physical comfort and my health and my beauty. Not that we should not take care of it, but majority of us, that's all we do the whole life, accumulating wealth, collecting, building a bigger house, bigger car, better summer home, winter home, you know, and just beautifying plastic surgery and this and that and on and on and on. We are just taking care of the body. Or maybe some people, they're a little bit evolved, so they take care of their mind. Oh no, I should love somebody and somebody should love me, and then and I write poetry and I, you know, send him or her, you know. Now in the olden days, they used to send poems. Now they send text messages and emails. It's less romantic, but it is the same idea. You know, you can write a nice poem or you can just text it. But the idea is that they spend all the time in worrying about their mind, you know, whom I love, and then she doesn't love me, and how can I get her to love me? And then when she doesn't love me, then I go and commit suicide, or I start taking drugs and I start drinking and I become worthless. Or others spend their whole life just learning and studying and acquiring and, you know, doing masters in this and PhD in this and a second PhD and a third PhD. And then at age 55 or 60, they say, I want to become a doctor. So then they go to medical school. Or a doctor, he will leave his medicine and go to law school. Why? You know, I want... So their whole life they are spending in worrying about body, mind and intellect. And what is my desire? Just to fulfill their desires. So it says, turn your mind's attention from the world of objects, emotions and thoughts and go inward. Once you have accumulated certain amount of comfort and all, you know, we are not saying that you don't have a house and a car and all. Yeah, you accumulate all that. You have found somebody you like and you have got a career and a profession. And once you are comfortable, then turn your mind's attention to what is the purpose of my birth. Why am I here? And that knowledge is very, very important. And that's why in this chart, we have given more importance to knowledge. Karma is service. You know, you serve the world. Definitely, with your body, you serve. And then you worship. That's why it says bhajatam. So approach the teacher and the Lord with worship, with love. But knowledge, jnana, to seek is very, very important. And do not spend your whole life in just doing and, you know, acquiring, because then you have wasted your life. This reminds me of a very beautiful story. There was this Hatha yogi. Hatha yogis are these people who can sit in one posture for months and years. They have perfected their art of, you know, the ability to. And they have so much conquered their body that this particular Hatha yogi could sit for 12 years. He could sit in one position for 12 years without moving, without even eating, drinking, because they, through that, their yogic powers, they can slow down their metabolism so that their body is barely functioning. You know, the heart is barely pumping, the lungs are barely moving, the metabolic rate has slowed down, and they can stay for 12 years without eating, and that has been described. So this Hatha yogi comes to this king and says, you know, I have this great power where I can stay for 12 years, and you can build me a, like a, you know, enclosure with an open things around, and I will sit in that, and it will be a little elevated platform, and I will sit there and do that, and I will stay for 12 years, and, you know, people can watch that I don't go anywhere, I won't even eat or drink. And the king says, wow, that will be great, you know, for me to have such a great yogi like you come and spend 12 years. It is a great honor for me. And not only that, but all seekers from all other kingdoms will come, and they will come and, you know, come to prostrate. And so, you know, my kingdom will become famous. I will be honored. What can I do for you in return? He says, in return, I want you to marry your daughter to me. And you have this beautiful white Arabian horse. So when I wake up from my meditation in 12 years, Hatha Yoga, not meditation, but the Hatha Yoga, you will marry your daughter and give me this beautiful Arabian horse. So king said, okay. And the daughter was the king's only child. So then obviously, you know, he would get the kingdom too. So king said, yeah, it will be an honor for me to have such a great yogi. And so he goes into his samadhi, into his state of Hatha Yoga, and he stays there for 12 years. Does not eating, not drinking, nothing. And so after 12 years have passed, he comes out of his you know, state of samadhi, and he starts and walks out, and he walks into the palace. And there he sees this young man, very beautifully dressed, wearing very nice clothes. So he says, excuse me, I am the Hatha yogi. He says, oh yeah, oh sir, he prostrates to him and all. Yeah, I know you have been meditating here 12 years. He says, now I was supposed to get an Arabian horse. So where is that Arabian horse? He said, sorry, the Arabian horse died 5 years ago. He was riding and met with an accident and had to be put to sleep. He died. Oh, really? Oh, yeah. And where is that king who promised me his daughter? Sorry, sir, that king also died, you know, three years ago, he died. He got sick, he was a little old, and he died. He said, okay, what about his daughter? You know, he had promised me his daughter to marry. He said, oh, the daughter, she's my wife now. I am the king. Says the king, before he died, he was sick, so he married her to me, and I am now the prince, and I am the king. So this poor guy spent 12 years in contemplating upon the horse and the girl. Instead of those 12 years, if he had been thinking about the reality or the consciousness and had the right knowledge, then he would have reached an immortal state of oneness with him. So that is what they're saying, that we waste our energies in just useless pursuits. There was another person who came to Ramakrishna Paramhans. He was a great saint. And he told him, you know, I have gone and I have meditated and done yoga for 10 years and I have come back. So Ramakrishna Paramhans says, very good. That's very good. She says, yeah, I have such powers, I can walk on this river, I can walk on water from this bank of the river to that bank. And I acquired that power after 10 years. So Ramakrishna Paramahansa says, I could give a boatman 25 cents and he would take me across the river, and you spend 10 years in learning what I can do in a quarter. So, I mean, the point is, the idea of that is that these siddhis or these powers should be, take me to the higher, and that is the purpose. So that is what it says, you need a paradigm shift. Paradigm shift. You need to shift your attention from what you have thought all along so far to a new realm of thinking. And that paradigm shift is required. And once that person has accomplished that, then that person goes beyond the body, mind, and intellect. As we have talked before, the body will go through its joys and sorrows, the heat and cold. You know, you might see 107 degrees and then you might see 30 degrees. You might have somebody love me and somebody doesn't love me. You might have success and failure. But a person who has realized the truth knows that in life, things, changes will come. Situations will never remain the same. But if he understands that I am that consciousness that was there in all states, in states of joy and sorrow, in youth, old age, and even when the body is declining and when I am getting ready to leave my body because of health and so on, you may either say that I am sad, or you might say, yes, I am that consciousness. And now when it is time for me to leave the body, I cheerfully leave it, because this body was an equipment that I used, and I used it for a while, and now it is time for me to drop it. Such a wise person does not even fear death. He or she goes beyond death. Why? Because he or she has understood that there is only one consciousness, and that is my nature. And this life is just a journey. And in this journey, I have been given this body, just as if you're traveling from here to somewhere else, you have a car. And then if the car, after a few years, breaks down, you just pick up, buy a new car. Why? In the journey of life, I need this car. I need it to commute from Northeast Bakersfield to Southwest Bakersfield. So that understanding, so the same identification with my body, that this body is a car that I have to use, and when it is time to drop the car because it is of no use to me, I pick up a new car. So it says effort is not necessary. You do not have to forcefully do something forcefully to realize the truth. You just have to understand. You just have to think correctly. So they say, change your thinking, change your paradigm. And what do we mean by paradigm shift? It is like people for years believe that the earth is flat. You know, they believe that the earth is flat, and you go on and on and on, and one day you'll come to the edge and you will fall off. And it was traditionally believed. And when somebody, Galileo and Copernicus and all, came with the idea, people called them stupid, called them fools. Some people even, you know, some of them were even poisoned for giving the wrong ideas. The church believed that the earth is the center of the universe and all other planets revolve around the earth. The sun, the moon, the stars, everything revolves around earth, God was made man in his own image. And so earth is the center of the universe. And when people proposed a different idea, they were, you know, tortured and killed. So certain beliefs were there for thousands of years, and there had to be a basic shift in thinking, paradigm shift. So whatever we have believed up to now, we have to change that. And so through this posture, turn your mind's attention to the Lord. Do not give too much importance to the body, mind, and intellect. Yes, I need to take care of my body just as I take care of my car. I take it every 5,000 miles for an oil change. So similarly, I take it every year to the doctor, get a checkup, whatever I need. Yes, for the mind, I need some mental happiness and joy. I need some career and all. But do not spend the whole life, drop it and turn the mind's attention. And that is this teaching of this book. And that's why the student says, I prostrate to the teacher and to the Lord who has given me this knowledge. And that knowledge cannot be acquired by force. That understanding cannot be forced or cannot be thrust. It has to come through the listening to the teacher, contemplating upon it, applying it in your life, and then to start living that knowledge. Just as sleep. Now, when you want to sleep, can I force myself to sleep? I want to sleep. The more I force, the more difficult it becomes to sleep. Why? Because it's not an effort. I just give up all my mental preoccupations. I reduce my thoughts. I relax my body. And I just fall into sleep. I just glide into sleep. I do not force myself. So similarly, meditation, you cannot forcefully catch your thoughts and hold them. Okay, my thoughts should not go anywhere. No, it is not a force. It is a gentle gliding into meditation, just merging into that true self. And that is the meditation. So meditation is not an activity. Meditation is not a verb. Swami Chinmayananda always says, meditation is not a verb, it is a noun. It is not an activity, it is a state to be in. So I am in meditation, not I am meditating. I am meditating is actually wrong. You can say I am contemplating, I am thinking the thoughts. And through the right understanding, when I go into that silence of where I become one with that reality, so that is final act of meditation. So where when the mind becomes still, and the person's activities become minimal, in that silence I experience the Lord's presence as I. And that is the final understanding. Svatmanam prakati karoti. He makes himself clear as he and I are one. So the right understanding of meditation is the oneness between the ego and the Brahman, the Lord. So ego and the Lord are one. And when they become one, then only you can reach infinitude. That's what these great scholars, these great prophets experience that. If you listen to Buddha's teachings, you listen to Christ, you listen to Swami Chinmayananda, they understood the oneness of the individual and the Lord. And it is because of that they themselves became infinite. Right now, I think of myself as this limited mortal who has limited power and limited knowledge and limited understanding and limited pervasiveness. But through this knowledge, I come to understand I am unlimited. I am all pervading. I am everywhere. And I am all knowing. I'm not this limited individual, but I am that all pervading consciousness. So that is the essence of this book, and that is the essence of this beautiful shloka. We have time. Any comments? Right. The vasanas are making us work, act. So we have to go beyond the vasanas. We have to slowly reduce our desires. That's what they say, reduce your desires, reduce your selfishness. As we said here, serve him. Serve him not as I, but as I am a servant of the Lord. And worship him with love. Approach the Lord with love. And ultimately seek him. And through these three processes, your vasanas will be reduced. Your selfishness, your desires will be reduced. You will see the one Lord everywhere. And that's why these saints can love everybody, even those who were, are ready to kill him or crucify him. He can see the Lord in them. So that is ultimately the state where then that person is no longer that limited individual. He no longer thinks of himself, but thinks of the totality. Through reduction, because the vasanas are what make us do selfish, become selfish. So one has to reduce our selfish desires. Right. When they appear, and so one has to be a constantly alert. And slowly go beyond just me and my, but see him. go beyond I and my and see him and his, and everything is him and his, or her and hers. God is, again, not male or female. It is the energy. If you worship the mother goddess, you say everything is her and hers. Right, I covered it last week. I thought you will be here, so, but no problem. But I'll just go over it again. From what I understand about it is that thoughts are an expression of the divinity, of the Lord's presence in me. See, if God was not there, thoughts would not arise. So everything is Him, including the thoughts. So everything is Him. So thoughts will arise. The problem comes when you identify with the thoughts as me, and then start chasing after the thoughts. And the thought then takes you, like, I wake up and I start thinking about work. What am I going to do? Where am I going to go? Whom am I going to meet? Or what am I going to wear? What am I going to eat for breakfast? So the thoughts are the ones that, but if you start hating the thoughts or start fighting with your mind or start criticizing your mind, then your meditation becomes a conflict. So in your meditation, you lovingly even accept the thoughts as the Lord's presence and then be a witness. Yes, the thoughts are arising in me, but they are in me. I am not in them. They are not. I am that consciousness. And because of me as the consciousness, I am responsible for these thoughts. So when you understand that, then you even embrace the thoughts as me. And then your meditation becomes an act of love rather than an act of conflict. Otherwise, you're forcefully trying to control the mind and not let it run. And so a lot of us, at least even I sometimes find myself in that state of where I'm trying to force the meditation. So when you accept the thoughts as they are, accept the mind, that my mind is the nature of the mind to create thoughts. So there is nothing wrong with having thoughts. The problem is identifying with the thoughts and becoming lost in the thoughts, where half an hour later I'm still thinking about, oh, this person I like and this person I don't like, and I know he's, my boss is so bad, or my neighbor or my spouse, or so I'm just, my 30 minutes or 40 minutes are just spent in, so in the 30 and 40 minutes I should be contemplating upon the Lord's presence. And once I identify with that consciousness, and it can be either with form or without form. You know, we are not saying that you can only meditate on God with form or without form. You can meditate upon Him as Jesus on the cross, or Krishna, or Buddha, or Shiva. Or you can meditate upon Him as the light of consciousness that is, you know, in the forehead. Or, in, you know, some people meditate upon the forehead or the middle of the chest. Or you can meditate upon Him as the sun, as the energy. But the idea is that you stay in that state of awareness of that Lord's presence, or as the inner, or a lot of them just meditate upon the inner light, the inner awareness. And in that awareness, then thoughts may arise, but you do not fight with them. You just let them be. And eventually the mind itself will slow down. Mind will, when it's not nourished by further, you know, because I am feeding my mind through my energy, through my consciousness. I am feeding the mind and creating more thoughts. But when I no longer give support to the mind, then the mind automatically quiets. So that's why they say you glide into meditation. You cannot force yourself. I think that's what he was trying to say. That's how I understand. Right, and that is my problem too, because I think those of us who we think we are intellectuals, we have that problem, because we have tried to solve everything with our mind. And I can sit down and solve all these word puzzles and this and that. And what I'm doing is just getting myself more and more trapped in my intellect. But, you know, it doesn't, my day doesn't start until I can solve that puzzle. You know, my breakfast doesn't digest. So, so that is the problem. I agree with you. But I think, like the river example of watching the thought, or actually you can practice throughout the day, that be aware, what is my mind doing right now? And practice it. That is, what is my mind thinking right now? And then separate yourself. I am aware of my mind. My mind right now is peaceful. My mind right now is agitated. My mind right now is hectic. And so I think this exercise, you know, throughout the day while I'm driving, I just watch my mind. While I'm doing the dishes or doing something that does not require much thinking, I can just be aware of the mind. But I think by using the means of, you know, watching the breath, chanting of the mantra, you know, those things may help. But chanting of the mantra, relaxing the body. And then in the sixth chapter, Sri Krishna says, Abhyasena tu Kaunteya Vairagena, through practice and through detachment. Right now, the reason I'm unable to give up the thought because I'm so attached to the thought. I'm so attached to my mind, I'm so attached to my ideas, to my concepts, to my... So even like people get attached to their, you know, ideas. Oh, I am a conservative, I am a Republican, I am a Democrat, I am a liberal, I am a, you know, intellectual, I am, you know, all those things, we get so attached to our ideas. So slowly detach yourself. It's not that important. I think because we give too much importance to our thoughts and to our ideas, we find it very hard to let go. Like a child is holding on to the toy and you are forcefully trying to pull it, the child will never give it up. But then you give the child a candy or a balloon, which is much more attractive, then the child drops the little toy she was fighting for and holds on to the something better. So give the mind something better to hold on to, which is the Lord, and then it will automatically drop. So develop detachment, and not forcefully.
But still, you don't see the whole. You're seeing only from your perspective or a little perspective. You might be right.
Like when I'm watching, when I'm watching TV or when somebody's telling me a gossip about somebody for half an hour, do my thoughts wander? No, I pay full attention. You're hearing some, you know, some news about somebody. Your mind is 100% focused, or you're watching TV or something, because but when you sit to meditate, then every thought comes, because at that time your mind has nothing else to do except to think. True. That's what Eknath Ishwaran says in his the handout I give in the 8th point. He says one of these is slow down and do one thing at a time. You know, I myself am very bad about it. But be single-pointed, do one thing at a time, and then take time to slow down, take time to enjoy the flowers, just sit in nature and do nothing. Just sit in the backyard and watch the trees for 30 minutes, and you'll say, the mind will say, I have so much to do, you know, and why am I wasting my time just watching this stupid tree? No, but, you know, but those 30 minutes, at the end of the 30 minutes, your mind will be so much calmer. Just go to Hart Park. I try sometimes if I have time, and just go sit by the river. There is no more beautiful place on this earth than that. It is so quiet and so peaceful. You sit under the tree, and it's like the tree is like protects you. You know, it's like God's presence. He's just enveloping you. And you sit there and listen to the river. It's the most beautiful 30 minutes you can spend. And all the time, then also you are, and your mind is again, you know, I have to go, I have to do this. So I think that's the problem. And we are all victims of that same.